thank you guys, and thank the organizers for this wonderful workshop. I've learned a lot from this, and very interesting to see people spending so much effort in testing the very basic assumptions that go into many of our calculations in the field. Actually, I could use light. Thanks. So for me, I think one of the most inspiring new ideas that were briefly introduced here, but mentioned every day, I think, is this idea that's related to the proposed Casper experiments with DeepMind, with Surjit and Peter. And so I think this experiment is so interesting and the new idea is so inspiring and exciting that it's really worth, from a theorist's point of view, to spend time and think, so what can we say about what this experiment can actually measure and what will we learn from this, and just spend more time thinking about the QCD axions and axion-like particles in this context. So just a brief, very brief overview, just to have all of us on the same footing here. So Surjit flashed this plot, was a little bit more precise, accurate on his talk, but for the Casper parameter space, well, the x-axis for this plot, I won't explain exactly what the Casper parameter space is, but broadly I would say, but in terms of the theory, so it's a two-dimensional plot, the x-axis is the mass of an axion-like particle, and the y-axis is the coupling of this particle to the spin of the neutron, and it's denoted GD in units of 1 over mass squared here.
Why D? What is D?
That's the name that was used in the paper. Is the, I don't know of an historical name, but I mean...
I guess it was G dipole. That's probably why the dipole was.
And so the experiment is look, and Surjit also mentioned the operator that we are going after in this experiment. So maybe a word before that. So on this plane of axion-like particle mass and induced electric dipole moment, this plane is well defined for a given fundamental coupling in the Lagrangian. So that we're starting, that we operate on the Lagrangian that we start to work with. And this is this non-derivative GG tilde operator. So of course, if A is constant, then this is a derivative operator. But due to the nature of QCD that has long distance vacuum configuration with fields that don't vanish fast enough in infinity, this operator generates at the level of bions and nucleons operators that are not derivative operators. And that's a beautiful magic and allows them to get powerful new scaling relations for the experiment. And so if you have this operator axion times GG dual, G is just the gluon field strength in the Lagrangian, then this operator induces neutron EDM. And what I've written as the QCD line is the relation. So if this A is what we call the QCD QCD axion, then the relation is 1-to-1, up to, say, factor of 2 uncertainties. If you give me the axion mass, now it's the axion, let's call it. If you give me the axion mass, I know the induced EDM that this operator is giving to us. And the Casper experiment, so they showed the proposed two phases, phase one and phase two. Casper experiment is looking for this induced EDM. And in some of its parameter space, the Casper experiment, so the second phase of the Casper experiment will actually cross this QCD line. And I think this is just tantalizing. This is fantastic.
The factor of two uncertainty is for neutron, right? I mean, for
yes,
atom,
that's okay. I'm not
a good factor.
I am not. That's so. It's not my purpose to go into the experimental details of the experiment and how they can actually achieve this and what other theoretical. Clearly, it's a huge challenge to do all these computations, and it's well worth it. If this even if naive expectations allow you to cover some of the QCD line, I think it's overwhelmingly beautiful. Why do I think so? So because if this experiment actually finds a particle, some will say here, this will settle in a beautiful and simple way to just huge outstanding anomalies that we have in the way we understand the Lagrangian of nature as we understand it now. So one of them is, of course, the strong CP problem. So abbreviated here is SCP that you all know, but let me mention it again. So if you have this term, the GG dual term, so let's put this term in the Lagrangian with some coefficient theta. And in the standard model, this term should be there with some, in principle, order one coefficient theta. Then this term, again, due to these instanton QCD effects, induces a neutron dipole moment. I'll walk through the derivation of this briefly later on. But the scaling is about 10 to the minus 16 E centimeter per theta. Okay? And the measurement of the upper bound on the neutron EDM says that this parameter theta should have been order 1, is smaller than 10 to the minus 10, and this is a very big problem that we don't understand the solution to. Okay? Another big anomaly that is not going anywhere is the question of dark matter in the universe. So simplest cosmology is consistent beautifully with this idea that there is some dark matter in the universe with energy density rho dark matter of about cosmologically 10 to the minus 6 GV per centimeter cubed. And this energy density scales just like dust particles, so it scales like 1 plus Z cubed, where Z is the redshift. And that's a huge thing. And well, the same solution that has been proposed for the strong CP problem in terms of an axion, so let's say we promote this theta parameter to a field A, normalized by its decay constant FA. You should think about it as just some parameter with dimension of mass. So a field with shift symmetry, A, then this, by the dynamics of QCD, if we just do this replacement, automatically cancels this theta term dynamically and solves the strong CP problem. But it just so happens that a very light scalar field, so this will produce a very light scalar field, and the equations of motion for a very light scalar field are such that if you look at the density perturbations in the background field for this field A, then it has the correct equations of motion to redshift like dark matter. And moreover, the perturbation theory, the cosmological perturbation theory, has the correct equation of motion for structure formation. And so this is, in principle, a beautiful dark matter candidate, a light scaling in general, as we've been saying, and this QCD axion. And if it is the dark matter, then we have a constraint for the expectation value of the mass squared times the value of the field squared at any given place in space, which has to be equal to the dark matter density. And in particular, it has to redshift, etc., but it will do that automatically. So two major problems, and what the Kasper experiment is after is the odd and beautiful marriage of these, of the solution to these two problems. So I think there is no doubt that finding a state here will be just a spectacular result. And the question that I want to address here quickly is, so we have this parameter space. First phase of Kasper is sensitive to some part of it. But in principle, we're looking at this two-dimensional parameter space. We have this QCD line, which is the prediction for the QCD axion state. But what is the meaning of actually searching for an EDM induced by this operator anywhere off this QCD line, either to the right or to the left? Okay? So I just want to understand what is the physical meaning of this. What does it take from us? What does it take from us in terms of these solutions? And the way I see it, the motivation to think about it comes up simply because somebody has developed a new idea that allows you to actually test what you're thinking. So there's nothing like this to open your mind and let you think a little out of the box. So what does it mean? The simplest word, we would like to find the QCD axion on here, but life can be more complicated. Maybe there are many axions. Maybe there are what we call axion-like particles. So what is the meaning, physical meaning of this two-dimensional parameter space? And specifically, I'm interested with this initial operator at high energy. So the states I'm talking about coupled to GG dual. And this coupling is the miracle one that gives you non-derivative operators downstairs that we want. Okay, so I reckon I have about 15 minutes to go through this. My plan is the following. Many of you already know many of the details much better than I do, but maybe some of the new ideas are new. But so to understand this question, I want to derive, just in a lightning review, what is this QCD line? How do we calculate it? And learn from this what we can understand of going up or down from it. So the important thing is, for the axion to provide a solution to one, to the strong CP problem, then it has to be a shift symmetric field that couples to this GG tilde. And at the level of the quark Lagrangian at high energies, above about a GeV, okay, there is a unique representation for this field A, okay, in terms of its the leading order interaction of this field A with the standard model quarks and gluons. Okay? And the unique way to do this, or A, the unique representation to do it is taking Lagrangian, which is, let's take it to be minus A over F. GG dual. And to this, I can add derivative operators with some sum on states. So with some coefficient and derivative, and so attached to that. So let's say psi, well, sigma bar mu psi. And this sum goes over all the color representation in the standard model. And then there will be just the standard model Lagrangian. So, but in terms of the interactions of the shift symmetric field with the standard model, these are the unique operators by which you are allowed to touch the standard model fields if you want to solve this strong CP problem. And so the rest of the operators are just standard model operators, so they will be the kinetic terms. So schematically, a sum, let's be interested in quarks here, so a sum of the quark kinetic terms have defined FA, the decay constant, that will show up there in a minute, in terms of GD, I've defined it through this operator. These couplings are completely model dependent. And so with this definition, the kinetic term for the axion is normalized. And then importantly, I have a mass term. Okay, well, these quarks are just your U and D quarks. And I'm going to ignore the heavier generations at this point. It doesn't change the results here. So very briefly, as you all know, this is the Lagrangian at energies larger than about 1 GeV. At energies below, about 1 GeV, we have to go to the Lagrangian of pions and nucleons. Okay? So what we want to do, the way we're going to see it, this axion field is very, very light. We're going to view this axion field as some very slow mode. So if you want to think about space-time varying constants, this is exactly what it is in this analysis. It's just a space-time varying constant, and we'll deal with the particle nature a little bit later on. And we just want to do to carry on the transformation from the quark Lagrangian, quark and gluon Lagrangian to the Carl Lagrangian in sort of the usual way, which for me would be chiral perturbation theory, and just carrying along this coefficient as a slow moving coefficient. Okay. So the way we do this, we're going to want to move from these quarks. Let me write them already in terms of doublets of some proximate symmetries that we have in this problem. So as you know, the pion and the nucleon Lagrangian is defined in terms of so these pions, these nucleons, so there will be the proton and the neutron, and the pion field, which I'll write as an exponent e to the I pi dot sigma over f pi. So these pions will be the usual charge and neutral pions that, you're used to. And the merit in writing the Lagrangian in this way is because, as you all know, ignoring this mass term in the Lagrangian. The Lagrangian is invariant under a big global symmetry, which is a U2 cross U2. Out of this symmetry, there are, of course, two U1 factors. This one is broken by the axial anomaly. This one is conserved, and it's just baryon number. And there are two SU2 factors, SU2 vector and SU2 axial, out of this big symmetry group. And this will be just isospin that is approximately conserved. And this will be nonlinearly realized by the pions, which is why I'm writing them in this way. And under this, this approximate global symmetry, this mass term is breaking, in particular, this SU2 factor. So I will not discuss any more the U1 at this point. And I can think about this mass term as a spurion of the symmetry. Well, under the symmetry, Mark works. So let me break the vector and axial into the vector and axial components of the following different SU2s. So this Q goes into some UL. Q, and this QC goes into some U, right? QC, and the vector and axial combinations of these SU2 factors will be these guys. Under this transformation, my pions transform as U goes into UL. UL Dagger, and if I want to analyze the low energy implications of this matrix M, I can think about it as a spurion that from the structure here would transform in the same way. And as you know, so at low energy, I will write the Lagrangian in terms of the nucleons and the pions. And the spurion analysis in terms of M will be such that I can write invariant operators under these global symmetries that carry these insertions of U and M. So in particular, I'm allowed to use operators like trace M U Dagger and additional operators that are invariant under this approximate symmetry. And this will manifest the symmetry at low energies.
And importantly, you're not putting any eta into the game, right? Because the component would restore U1.
That's right. But the U1 is broken badly. Right. So I'm just ignoring it implicitly.
I'm decoupling it.
Absolutely, yes. Yes. So Maxim and Adam has a very nice paper where they carry on the same analysis, but not strictly from the color perturbation point of view, but from QCD sum rules. And there you can see how the units fit in somewhat different perspective. In particular, you can see how this decoupling of this eta is crucial for the analysis. But I'll just go straight forward. This is an analysis that has been done in the 80s, and just explain what this QCD line is to leading order. Through that. So, so what is this pion-nucleon Lagrangian? Well, we cannot calculate essentially any of the coefficients for the operators, but we can write invariant operators in terms of these nucleons and pions and in terms of this spurion mass M. So, all I have to do is write all the low energy operators that I'm allowed to write in terms of these fields. So, I'll just quickly do this. So, I have some kinetic terms for these nucleons and kinetic terms for these pions. U Dagger. And various other terms. So for example, there are terms like the nucleon mass, which breaks the symmetry. So I have to add pion insertions in it. So these are the pions again, plus other operators. And then I want to see how this mass term goes into the Lagrangian here. So before I do that, to be able to use this magic of the spurion analysis of the mass term, I would like to move the axion into it. So how do we do that? OK, so the point is, I've written this as a representation for unique representation for the coupling of the axion to the standard model fields. But due to the anomaly equation, I can shuffle between different operators here. So in particular, I can make an axial transformation of these quarks and QC and move this coefficient of the Gigi-Tilde operator into other places in the Lagrangian. So for instance, if I take the transformation of Q goes to Q e to the I x a over f a, so a slowly spacetime varying transformation, so let's call this C, some constant coefficient, and a over f a, and QC goes into QC times e to the I 1 minus C a over f a. If I do this spacetime transformation of the quarks, then go back to your books to remind yourselves. So what happens is this coefficient a over f in front of the Gigi tilde transforming into a over f a minus your c plus 1 minus c a over f a, which goes to 0. So this transformation, just because it has unit rays, eliminates the a over f term in here. What it will do, it's a space-time transformation from your kinetic term here. You will redefine this coefficient c psi. They weren't known from the start. They are redefined to something else that is not known. And the other thing is that you will do, just looking at this, immediately you will see I will introduce a space-time varying phase, a over f a into m, that initially had no information of m. Okay? So from the moment that I've done this basis redefinition for my q and qc's, I can actually forget about this operator and move into another representation of this A over F, where my mass matrix carries all the information of the axion. There is an infinite set of choices for this transformation that I can do. So in particular, let me set this mass matrix M to be equal to mu e to the I a over f a, and md with no phase here. But I could distribute the phase anywhere I want. The only thing that's important is the phase of the determinant of m. Okay, so this is just a choice which will not affect the final results, of course. So, and now I can follow my Sporen analysis and see how other operators appear that include invariant combinations like that. There are not many choices at the level of no derivatives, so we don't want derivative operators, we just want these local operators. So in fact, there are only two choices I care about here. So they come with some dimensionful coefficients that I cannot calculate, but one option is just to add my m u dagger plus m dagger u. So that's one option. I have no idea what the coefficient is in advance. And a nucleon operator that I can write is some C n bar so I basically rewrite this operator here, but instead of this nucleon mass I add an insertion of my m in the invariant way, the minimal invariant way that I can do it. So I will also have u m dagger u pr n, and there will be other terms with more derivatives. Yes.
Can I, just a silly question.
Well, yeah.
Basic question. This is what you've done here to get the phase. This is exactly why Strong CP is a tuning, right? Because you have some original unknown parameter theta and some original unknown phase of the determinants, and you can always kind of shuffle the two back together. So you've got some pure QCD same thing and some essentially.
Right. You have two terms that naively would know nothing about each other. One is just the winding number of this theta vacuum that would be there from the QCD, and the other is whatever phase the determinant of the mass recovery landed with after electric symmetry breaking carried.
Also importantly, effective theta equals zero is the minimum of energy, right? Otherwise,
I haven't done it yet,
yeah,
but yes. So I will do it. So very, very quickly. So after this, everything follows very fast. So all I want to do next, I simply want to expand all my fields. So I do is simply expand all the exponentials here of these shift invariant fields. So I just expand this exponential here in the operators, and I just simply expand the nucleons and the pions. Okay, that's all I do at this point. And once you do this, so you can do this in your mind, so these are all, so U is a unitary matrix, So UU dagger, if you don't expand in pions, is just one. Actually, UU dagger 10 order is just one, but you have to either take derivatives or sandwich it with an M. But all you have to do is just expand these guys. What you find, there are also contributions from the derivative operators that I haven't written, but I could have. So the derivative operators at low energy translate into the couplings of the axion current to the PQ current, essentially, that involves mixing of the axion, so kinetic mixing of the axion with the pion. So in particular, there will be also operators. Once I expand, I will have mass mixing that will come from this operator, essentially. So there will be terms that look like A pi naught. OK, that's other terms. There will be terms that looks like, so over FA, F pi. There'll be term that looks like d mu a, d mu pi over F a, F pi, etc. And other terms with some mass squared. So there will be mass and kinetic mixing. You diagonalize this. The particular nature of this, of the mass and kinetic mixing, would result from whatever arbitrary choice you started with for parameterizing your phase in the mass matrix. But there is a physical basis for the mass eigenstates with canonical kinetic terms. You just diagonalize this Lagrangian, and you land down with a bunch of operators. I write a few of them. Okay, so all I'm doing is expanding the exponentials here. So let's just define this QCD line. So first operator is just the pion, will be just the axion mass. Second operator I'll choose to write is an operator with nucleons. The sigmas are just the Pauli matrices, if I didn't say before. And all I'm doing here is giving names to the dimensionful coefficients I've written before. Okay, and we match those to nuclear data, so measurements that we do to measure these coefficients in the Carrel-Lagrangian. But they are all well-defined regardless of this load mode of M. Okay, so all these names are completely well-defined regardless of whether my N has this axion fluctuation on top of it or not. And let's write just another operator, g bar. So they are recurring. You've seen this g bar here also. Okay? And infinitely many other operators, but these are the leading ones that I'm interested of. And so just a few comments, so let's call this. You can notice by some symbol.
So yeah. The third line, does it go to zero at mu going to zero?
Yes. So I mean, this line?
Yeah.
So yes, because of what G bar is made of. So just the way I chose to factor this up.
Okay.
And the reason I've chosen this way, because operator will lead to an EDM. This operator will lead to another effect, and they're correlated directly. So I just want to exhibit that fact. So all right, so these coefficients we know we've measured. So I've wrote the axion interactions here, but also the rest of the nuclear interactions. And so we've measured them, and this G is a number of order 3.5. This G bar is a number of order 0.02. Your F pi is of order 90 MeV, M pi of order 140 MeV, etc. Okay, so we know the coefficients of these operators, and they're all related by known coefficients because they've all come from a single operator in the quark Lagrangian. And another comment of what I got here on the right, these operators that have led to kinetic mixing, okay, so these derivative operators, do not contribute, that are model dependent, do not contribute to any of these operators that I wrote here to leading order in 1 over f. Okay, so there is no c psi that goes in here. Everything comes from defining the canonical basis and using this GG-tilde operator. Okay, so these c psi are simply unimportant for what is going on here at the leading order. It's all coming from the GG-tilde. Okay, so what does this mean? Just to make completely clear, this is all known from the 80s at this point. Now let's see what the implications are for our new directions. So I have...
We have anti-gravity.
I have anti-gravity. I have three terms here. So the first one is just the axion mask, and it says that Fa squared, just the coefficient as I defined it of the glue-glue tilde, that's Fa, times the physical mass of this axion is just given by m pi squared f pi squared mu mb md squared. Okay, so I loosely define this as lambda qcd to the 4. So that's the first line. The second line relates to this thing with the square bracket, so the operator 2 there. So the cross product of the two terms, the g gamma 5, the gi gamma 5, and the g bar over f a term, leads to a diagram that gives a large contribution of the neutron EDM. So there is a diagram with an intermediate soft pion and a proton, which you can attach a photon. And this diagram is made by the cross product of these two terms. So we'll put here A over FA. That's the usual estimation in the chiral perturbation theory of the neutron EDM. So this loop gives you a DN, neutron EDM, proportional to A over FA, E GG bar. And there is this soft pion log, roughly this, okay, which I can define as GD times A, okay? And so in this chiral perturbation theory for all QCD axion, this GD is simply given by this coefficient. So if I put FA in here. This thing is just GD, so obviously my GD is just proportional to MA, okay? And the value of this GD is about 10 to the minus 3 GV to the minus 1 FA to the minus 1, okay? And we can calculate. So for those of you who didn't know when you saw this plot earlier on, that is the QCD line, and that it has, we can determine it in the Spurian analysis. So just a comment about these other operators that I've wrote. So there are many other operators. I just chose one. The one that I chose is equivalent to a neutron proton mass splitting. So let's call this Q naught plus delta Q, where delta Q is the contribution of our new operator. This Q naught is about 1.3 MeV, and this delta Q is about 0.4 MeV times A over FA squared. How much time do we have?
A couple minutes, maybe?
A couple minutes, okay. That's very good. Okay, so let's, we have all we need to discuss what it means to sit on this plane, okay? So we just worked out this QCD line. Now the question is, imagine a more complicated situation. I took one state, this A. What if I have some axiverse? What if I have a gazillion other axions that are all walking around, also coupled to the QCD anomaly? Maybe I can change this result and sit somewhere else in this two-dimensional parameter space. And maybe I can actually sit above this line. So what if I have, I think I'm going to need 5 minutes. Will you survive?
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't really have
to.
So you can make your text.
You can just go. So what happens if I take my A over F A, GG, dual, and I take it into some sum I, AI over FI, GG dual in here. So can I go down? Can I go in any direction here? Or am I still on the line? So the answer to both questions is the following. So first, yes, you can go off the line. Second, unfortunately, no, there is no way that I'm aware of. There is no proof that I'm aware of either, but there is no way that I'm aware of in this setup to go to this direction. Okay? You can go to the right. Why? Intuitively, think about it this way. So still, the only coupling up to this derivative operators that you're allowed to write is in terms of this GG tilde operator. So you can just say that there is a unique linear combination, let's call it AF A bar over F A bar, that talks to GG tilde. And then in principle, I could add some other unspecified UV potential to the sum, to the set of extra axions. Now, however, only one axion, only one linear combination talks to the QCD, and only one linear combination gets a mass. The mass matrix that you get from QCD is rank one, just this vector squared. Okay? So this UV potential will add mass mixing in principle between the axions. All the mass mixing can do is dilute your coupling to GG tilde and put you down. So to convince yourself very quickly, you can just prove it quickly. So, and as a comment, there is no reason that the solution to the strong CP problem should be lost in this process. So for instance, I could choose VUV with sufficient symmetries. It has enough flat directions that this particular combination can still relax at zero. There is no problem in principle about that. So just imagine we take a two-axion case. We have some A over FA plus A over FA. GG dual, and I choose my VUV with enough symmetries. In particular, I can take MUV squared over 2 A squared. So this potential, A would go to 0 with this potential, okay? And this direction here would be what you would have called the QCD axion, more or less. There will be some mass mixing, but there is no problem with the strong CP problem, yes?
Do all the other axioms in this model have to get their masses at a scale above lambda QCD for this to work?
Oh, no. So I've just added the UV potential that could be there at any scale, in principle. So I'm just adding a completely unrelated contribution. All I need from that contribution is sufficient symmetry to allow me a flat direction to conserve my strong CP. So that conserves my PQ symmetry. Okay, so I've written one realization of that. So what will this do? This will give you a mass matrix that you can just work out for this scalar. So I'll have some A, and your mass matrix is just 1 alpha, alpha, alpha squared plus beta. You can write it this way. This is something you can check immediately. Well, my alpha I define as F over F, just a choice of ratio. And my beta I'll define as my MUV squared over MA squared. Let's call it MQCD. So MQCD is the term, is the mass that I would get in the ordinary QCD axion case with lambda QCD to the 4, etc. downstairs, and defined with the small FA. When you look at this mass matrix, to have no tachyonic eigenstate means that beta, of course, have to be larger than 0. Okay, so you see, for the determinant of this mass matrix to be positive, this beta is larger than 0. So I think I'm inventing time travel. But losing the razor at the cost.
Oh, it's up there.
Okay. So just an exercise you can check over lunch. I haven't broken the PQ symmetry. I can still have solved the strong CP problem. But in this case, to ensure that the determinant of this M squared is larger than 0 implies that this beta is larger or equal than 0. Once you've done that, you can just diagonalize this math matrix and calculate what is F times M for the axion 1 and 2, the mass eigenstates you get downstairs with this mass matrix mixing. And you just find an expression two over one plus minus kappa square root kappa square root plus four beta alpha square root. Okay? This thing is always larger than one. Convince yourself that to stand above the line requires that this combination f times m has to be smaller. So one is the QCD f times a, so lambda QCD squared. So to stand above this line means that that combination there has to be smaller than one. And so very quickly, it's proved that by mass mixing of, in fact, an arbitrary number of extra axions, even if you conserve strong CP, you simply cannot go this way. You can, unfortunately, happily go this way without compromise from CP. So that's one comment I wanted to make about
The principle, if you write down two axions, two potentials may not have the same origin.
But that's true. So all I need is that I do need that the potential has enough symmetry. I can't seem to look at the question.
But
so,
in other words, if you go way above this line, you'll be in a technical and natural place,
so,
right? Because mass is not protected.
So there are two things happen.
Yeah.
So 1 minute. First, notice we can go, unfortunately, below this line. No problem with strong CP, and we can discuss later. Please send me an email because I have to run, actually. But so you can live downstairs, I don't see any problem. If we go upstairs, we could go upstairs, so I've imposed a condition on VUV that needs say, but I actually implicitly impose it that it has enough symmetry. So the mass matrix that it induces has less than full rank. Okay, it has rank one, I had two fields in there, I had to have it in general. If I would break this condition or this assumption, then generally I violate strong CP. Okay, so I've lost my solution to the strong CP problem. I don't think I've made it any worse, by the way, though it's worth thinking. So still I have my dark matter candidate. The other thing that I'm doing if I stand here is that, again, this coupling descends from the single Gigi-Tilla combination, and it would like to give me this mass over here.
Mm-hmm.
So to stand way to the left means I've had to add a potential that will fine-tune this mass away. Okay, and the mass is roughly the square of this gap. Now, fine, that could be uncomfortable, but I don't quite see that for the Higgs who have a better understanding of what's going on. So I don't quite know what to say about fine-tuning of scalar masses, okay? So in this case, I allowed myself to break the shift symmetry from the start. And so this is fine-tuned for the mass, but technically you can be there. So then what I didn't have time to derive for you, but it's easy to understand, I've wrote also these operators that are proportional to A over F squared. And in the start, I've mentioned that for this setup, A over F A squared is the dark matter density. So it redshifts like Z cubed, okay, that I also wrote above. So what it means is as you go to earlier into high temperature or early times in the early universe, coefficients of the Carrier Lagrangian, this one specifically, redshift up. And this coefficient in particular gets a factor of 10 to the 30 by the time you go to neutron freeze-out, or just before Big Bang nucleosynthesis happened. And so you can draw another line on this parameter space that goes somewhere here. And this line says that the chiral Lagrangian goes berserk at BBN. Okay? So you cannot, even if you ignore fine-tuning, you cannot keep BBN as a predictive theory and go arbitrarily high above this line. So let me finish. I think the idea behind the Cassper experiment is absolutely fantastic. I think the fact that they can, in principle, go to the QCD line is just brilliant, and any amount of effort should be put into that. And it's interesting, the fact that you have suddenly potential experimental capability to touch this parameter space makes it interesting, theoretically, to think about the implications to live here. It would be interesting if somebody can come up with a theory that actually can put a state in here. So perturbatively, I don't think it's possible. I don't know of any solutions for this, but if there exists one, it would be interesting to know. It is interesting and unfortunate. You can live below. So if you've seen the ADMX, for instance, expectations that can exclude part of the QCD axion line in principle, so that is simply not true. If there are many axions in the system, unfortunately, this becomes a two-dimensional parameter space, or half, one and a half-dimensional parameter space, and you can go down. So if you could improve ADMX, for instance, by a factor of 10, you should, okay? Because there is not information only here, but there could be information also there. Second is, if I need to make a prediction here, Casper 1 will not find, definitely not the QCD axon. So as far as the theorist can make a prediction, there will not be a detection there. Maybe find something else. But for Casper 2, I want to say this is absolutely spectacular. And I'm just looking forward to see what happens.